The concept is brilliant, brave, simple, and candid. You take a group of 13 D.C. area high school students on a field trip across the country. In each city, you pay a visit to the local MLK Boulevard or avenue or street, and you let the kids interview the residents on those streets about what everyday life is like and how that life compares with the promise of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy. Sharnice Fox Richardson is Chief Creative Director of Straight No Chaser Productions. She directed the 2012 documentary film, The MLK Streets Project, and she joins us here on The Signal. Sharnice, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Also joining us is the director of the nonprofit One Common Unity, which partnered with Straight No Chaser Productions to help create this film, Hawa. Hawa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And finally, I'm happy to welcome one of the 13 then high school students who set out on this documentary adventure. She's in college now at Spelman. Alexis McCollum, welcome to you as well.
Hello.
And congratulations on a really well-edited and thought-provoking film. There's a lot that I'm looking forward to talking about with you guys, the whole politics of how these streets are chosen to be renamed and why and by whom, the difference between how Dr. King is popularly remembered today compared to the complexity of who he actually was and what he stood for. But first, I want to share a clip from the beginning of this film. This is a clip that sort of sets up the irony that you all take as your inspiration. This is, we're going to hear narrator Rain Pryor talking about the history of American main streets across the country.
Main Street was often home to the post office, courthouse, and jail. The teens had their soda shop there while the adults had the local tavern. In other words, Main Street was the main artery of any city, USA. Here, the town criers would stand on their soapboxes and shout the latest news. The heartbeat of America, this street connected people to one another in a concrete way. But interestingly enough, the main street of Black America tends to go by a different name. In 1995, here's what one town crier had to say about that.
You know what's so sad, man? You know what's wild? Martin Luther King stood for nonviolence. Now it's Martin Luther King, a street. And I don't give a f*** where you in America. If you're on Martin Luther King Boulevard, there's some violence going down. It ain't the safest place to be. You can't call nobody and tell them you lost on MLK. I'm lost. I'm on Martin Luther King. Run! Run! Run!
Comedian Chris Rock on his stand-up comedy tour back in 1995. And of course, that joke is it's one of those barbs that has kind of taken its place in this timeless pantheon of American humor. Sharnice Fox Richardson, let me ask you to say a bit about the social impact of that joke and what inspired your documentary team to pick it up and run with it in a very serious way.
Well, we were definitely inspired by the joke. And also being from D.C., just kind of knowing how true that joke actually is. There's truth in every joke, pretty much, and every stereotype there is always the truth. And we were just interested in what the streets looked like. We knew what D.C. looked like. We knew what Anacostia looked like. And so we wanted to see if that rang true across the country, because Chris Rock did make this joke about running in any city that you find yourself in when you find yourself in on an MLK street. And of course, that means you're in the Black side of town. So, you know, was it true? And how did that look when you found yourself in a different part of a city anywhere in America?
Hawa, your thoughts?
I think the irony behind the poverty, the environmental racism, the systemic number of liquor stores that you find and concentrated on these boulevards is it's really disastrous and it's unfortunate. And in a way, when we find ourselves on these boulevards and we see the street sign, we almost want to live up to that second part of his dream. So I think exploring that question was really important, and I'm glad we had a chance to do it.
Alexis McCollum, you're one of the dozen or so then high school students who were brought into this project. You traveled the country, and you acted as sort of an on-the-ground correspondent at these various MLK streets. What's your assessment? I mean, how true is this joke? What do these streets have in common? What distinguishes them?
I'm glad that you asked that question, because I didn't think about it until you just asked this question. So originally I'm from the Anacostia area, which is the MLK Street runs through that area, which is pretty bad. And actually, funny thing is, I've moved on. I'm in college. I'm at Spelman. And a block away is MLK Boulevard. So right there, I'm literally right there next to everything we discussed, economic-wise, social-wise. They just recently put a Walmart on that same boulevard. So next to the liquor store, next to the beauty shop, next to the black establishments, the regentrification is forming a little bit around that area. But most of the things that we talked about in the documentary are still there and relevant. So
can I say something about Walmart? I find it really interesting. Walmart actually has this commercial every Martin Luther King Day. They run on all the black stations talking about how you can find a Walmart near every MLK around the country. Like, it's so interesting to me how these organizations co-opt this idea of Dr. King's dream and don't ever think about what he really stood for when it comes to the disenfranchisement of neighborhoods that they find themselves in. Really, that's what our film speaks to, is just this idea of co-opting King's dream into something that's just really not teaching who he was to the youth so that they just want to walk around dreaming. And that's like being a zombie, right? Like, what are you learning from that?
Yeah, the dream is definitely deferred.
You say in the film, dreaming plus marching equals sleepwalking. It's a hugely important point that you make in your film. And I want to get into it again in a more general way in just a few minutes. But first, let me shift gears and ask you guys to talk about the phenomenon of how these streets were selected to be renamed after Martin Luther King Jr. There are some 800 streets across the U.S., all with this honorific name. I mean, who decided to rename these streets and why?
It varies from city to city. The first city to ever be named after Dr. King was right after he was assassinated in Chicago. And then most of them are concentrated in the South. And the reason for that is, you know, obvious. He's from the South, and black people are pretty much concentrated in the South in places like Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama and North and South Carolina. Oftentimes, people choose to rename streets, I think, in a way to honor King or to honor any person from the civil rights era. And the reason is because it's easier than naming a museum after Dr. King or having a statue erected in honor of Dr. King. The street's already there. So, you know, how do we go about renaming it? The thing that happens is usually they go to city council members or they go to the mayor. But what has happened with the idea of naming the street after Dr. King is that a lot of cities now don't want it because of what happens or what that means. So like in Sarasota, Florida, people fought to not have a street named after Dr. King because that automatically meant that they felt like their property value would go down, that it automatically meant that it was in the hood. And so what you find now is that people don't want streets named after Dr. King because of Chris Rock's joke, because of the stereotype, because of it means that you are in a black neighborhood and you could maybe get shot. So, you know, it's really interesting, the dynamics and what it takes to rename a street and especially what that looks like in a lot of these communities.
I should say, in addition to interviewing a lot of people on the street, your team interviews a lot of scholars and civil rights luminaries. And at one point in your documentary, you interview the writer Walter Mosley.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, in a lot of instances, it's actually kind of a cynical cheap shot because you've got these all-white city councils, and they pick the city's most dilapidated street and give that one the name MLK.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything is political, I guess.
Everything. Everything.
You don't want to do the real work that it takes, too, to live up to the name, right? I mean, the real thing, creating a school or a museum or like creating a center of social justice and nonviolent training on an MLK Boulevard, that's the real work. I mean, naming a street is easy, but the nuts and bolts and the building of the mortar and the bricks to transform a street, that effort has not gone in.
Yeah, nobody thinks about it from that perspective. To have 800 streets named after Dr. King, imagine if those 800 streets actually had the work nonviolent centers in Chicago.
Training centers and educational centers and beacons of social justice movement building work.
Exactly.
Now that's building movement, but just naming a street after him is not really necessarily doing him justice.
From WYPR in Baltimore, this is The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin, talking this week with the makers of a documentary film called The MLK Streets Project. It's a movie that follows 13 D.C. area high school students around as they visit numerous MLK streets and avenues and boulevards in cities across the country, interviewing locals about the legacy of the late civil rights leader whose name is emblazoned on their street signs. My guests are director Sharnice Fox Richardson, producer Hawa, and Alexis McCollum, a then high school student, now in college, who was one of the featured reporters in this film. And Alexis, out of curiosity, let me turn to you now as the youngest person at the table and ask for your generational perspective on Dr. King's legacy. I mean, is he sort of a hazy, oversimplified historical figure for young
yes.
people at this point?
For me personally, growing up, you heard about the dream. He had a speech and everything. What you learn is that, you know, I feel like for most civil rights leaders, the story is pretty simple. They fought for freedom. They fought for justice. But to me, it just seems as though everything is glossed over.
It's human nature, I guess. I mean, Sharnice, Hawa, your thoughts on this? Like, we're all prone to whittle these historical figures down over the generations into these little factoids, right? I mean, like George Washington chopped down a cherry tree and never could tell a lie.
Yeah, but he was also the founding father of America, and we learned that history. We don't learn the history of Dr. King, except for I Have a Dream. Mm-hmm. Dr. King was gangster. A lot of people don't know he was getting ready to develop the Poor People's Campaign. Mm-hmm. When he stopped talking about race and started talking about economics is when he was silenced, and people don't understand that. And so that's why we've been spoon-fed the I Have a Dream speech, because that is just dreaming. Again, you go back to that, and when you teach people, words are so important and so powerful. So when you're teaching, if you're teaching about economic disenfranchisement to a group of kids, or you're teaching them dreaming, like, which one is going to make them want to get up and go do something?
Right.
And I just feel like it was definitely by design what we're taught. So yeah, you know, George Washington, he chopped down a cherry tree, but he also fought the Revolutionary War. He also was in a boat. Like, I learned so much more about him growing up than I ever did about King, except for one time a year and one speech.
You know, one part that really, I just finished reading the autobiography of Dr. King, literally like a few weeks ago, brilliant book. And one thing that I think is often forgotten too is how hard this man worked.
Yeah.
He put in 15, 16 hours a day every day,
mm-hmm.
building movement, building civil rights struggle, training thousands of people. Was not something that, yeah, the man was brilliant. He
mm-hmm.
was a brilliant orator. He was a brilliant thinker. And his moral compass was magnetized, you know, on the right pole and everything. All that was right. But he sacrificed so much to work so hard. And I think a lot of us think that it can just come easily. And, oh, yeah, I just do a little bit here and there, and that's going to make it all happen. But, I mean, to really understand Dr. King and to understand what it takes to become someone to help guide and lead a movement, it's a lot of work.
You bring up a pretty controversial point in this documentary when you, I mean, obviously, Dr. King made some enemies.
Yeah.
He was a hugely influential man and began saying things that really riled some people.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, you ask the question, would King be so universally loved
mm-hmm.
and revered today if he hadn't been assassinated, if
mm-hmm.
he hadn't been martyred,
mm-hmm.
if he was going on about his business, working 15, 16 hours a day, continuing his activist work? I mean, how would he be received? What's the answer you guys heard to that?
A lot of people didn't think that he would still be, if he were still alive. A lot of people responded to us saying that they didn't think that he would be as well received as he is now. It was only in his death that he became this martyr. And I agree with that, I think, especially understanding that he was moving towards this idea of economics. Because once you look at economics, then we're all equal. You know, Black people and white people are equal on the level when it comes to finances that we aren't when you try to separate us by color. And I think that unifying us as Americans in that way is a completely different movement. And I don't think that he would have been well received from that standpoint, because once you start talking about money, it's just a whole different conversation. And people mm-hmm. don't want to talk about money. His work would be appreciated, but he would not be the person that we remember today, because the work that he actually was beginning to do, we don't know. We haven't consumed that in the way that we've consumed the I Have a Dream speech, because that's easy. It's pretty. It's easy. Let's go hold hands
justice.
And sing Kumbaya off into the sunset, and everybody's happy. You know, when you, like, again, you start talking about people's money, and that's a whole different
mm-hmm.
conversation.
Let me get back to the crux of your documentary film, mm-hmm. the MLK Streets Project. I mean, this film tours us through all these MLK streets, boulevards, avenues across the nation. And it shows these areas in, as you say, like a really stark and really candid light. And it begs the question, which you ask in the film, if Dr. King were alive today, what would he think of these places? Is this a fulfillment of his legacy, or is it a mockery? I mean, that's a question you put to people, and what's the answer you found?
Well, I'll say first, Oakland and San Francisco is a wonderful, I'll let Alexa speak to that. But so what I do want to say is that not all the streets are dark. Not all the streets are a place where you feel like you can, you know, you'll be hurt or robbed. There's a sense of community in a lot of places. And even in the places where you feel like you could potentially be hurt, I guess, there is still this sense of community that exists. And it's really about perspective. But in Oakland, it's absolutely beautiful. It's crazy. It starts not beautiful, and then you end up at a beach. And mm-hmm. it's just, it really, I think that the Bay Area totally gives you this idea of what King Street should look like. Alexis actually went with us to Oakland. So
that was actually my favorite place that we visited. It was really, really interesting because East Oakland was, you know, a little rough and, you know, a little dry, no greenery. And, you know, we're driving and we hit, I think, Berkeley. Was mm-hmm. it the Berkeley area?
Berkeley
and
side.
There's like this, was it the National Park was there?
So
and it was beautiful.
Beautiful
and a beach. And yeah. it, you know, you can see the physical change from a rough street to this beautiful garden area. There's a college campus nearby. The houses look different. So for me, that really, it woke me up to make me realize, well, it's not really what, you know, not everything is, you know, the rough MLK streets that we think it is. So it really put a different perspective for me.
Sharnice Fox Richardson, Hawa, and Alexis McCollum of the documentary film The MLK Streets Project. You can see the movie Monday, this coming Monday, January 20th, the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. It's going to be screening at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum in downtown Baltimore at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can check out the museum's website, rflewismuseum.org, for details. Sharnice, Hawa, and Alexis, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.